Hey, welcome to Athlete on Fire, and this show is brought to you guys by Spartan Media Fest and ATP Science. Those guys helped to bring me out here to Tahoe to interview all these amazing people, so got to give those guys a shout out. You're about to listen to a show with Patrick Sweeney, and we talk about fear and mindset and why people don't try things they're scared of. It's pretty awesome to hear his story. High-level Olympic trials rower. We talk about rowing and how you guys can practice better habits on that machine, even if you don't like it, even if you just need to do it every once in a while. He gives a really good set that you can try out in the gym next time you go in. We talk about his background and the turnaround that really made him want to change his life and adventure for a living. So all things that I'm really passionate about, I think you guys will enjoy as well. This is Patrick Sweeney. Enjoy. Patrick Sweeney, fear guru. We started our interview a little late because we both wanted our coffee. Yeah. And God bless those guys. They're not fast coffee makers.
They are not fast. Hopefully they make it up in quality. It's pretty good. Pretty
it is good.
Good cup of coffee.
So do you start your day off with caffeine every day?
I actually have a pretty strict, I wouldn't say strict, pretty definitive morning routine. Mm-hmm. And the coffee comes in at the end of it. But for sure, I do some breathing exercises. I do some cold showers. I try and take advantage of the neurons being completely repaired, all your memories from the previous day consolidated, and being at your most productive. So I really focus on using that hour, getting the blood flowing a little bit too.
So morning routine has been, I won't say beat up, but it's been on the forefront of people, all the talking heads, people who are doing things from a performance standpoint. Conceptually, I love it. I've always been a really strict morning person. Like that's when my brain is working typically.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I still have the words I want. Like I'd be interested to see how you do after about 10 interviews today. If your mouth
I'll be
is
mush.
Working.
Yeah.
But, I have young kids now. And
what ages?
They're 6 and 8.
Yeah.
Well, the 5-year-old will be 6 next week, and I just got like the morning routine with when they were young. Like I can do a lot of stuff that people want to do now, but that's just like how's it going to happen? You know, speak to that a little bit for people who are busy.
Yeah.
How do you get around that?
So I think you know. You make your own time. You have, for me, the perspective is when people say, oh, I can't do it, I don't have time. Complete bullshit, right? They don't want to make time. And that initial, even if it's just 15 minutes for a morning routine, like doing some breathing, first of all, waking up, having gratitude, you know, thank God I'm alive.
Yeah.
Marcus Aurelius has a great quote that, you know, every time you wake up, you should be thankful for your friends, your family, the fact that you're alive and you've got another day to enjoy and love. And so I take the same thing. First thing's gratitude. Second thing, I do some Tummo breathing and breathing from Kundalini yoga. And all of that takes maybe 10 or 15 minutes. Even if you just started your day out with that, you're starting on your own terms and you're setting yourself up for a great day. Where I think people end up fucking themselves is grabbing the phone. Immediately.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And as soon as they grab their phone, they're letting other people dictate their day because they're in a reactive mode. And then the whole day is reactive mode. You know, I saw this email, it set me off. I saw this post on social media. How could he say that about me? You know, all this stuff. And immediately your mind starts to take off and you lose that opportunity for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So I think for people who are busy or who have kids or whatever, waking up 15 minutes earlier than you normally would or waking up a half hour earlier, it just makes that day so much better.
Yeah. I think with movement too, excuse me, like there's not an all-or-none principle in movement and healthy behavior. If it turns into 3 minutes, I mean, you can show gratitude in 3 minutes or you can do something to set your day straight. Because I see this so much with clients that want to get – people feel like they have to like set aside this 60-minute chunk to go get a good workout in.
No.
And it's just not right.
Just having the intention to do something and take control over your day has a neurological effect, right? It starts to strengthen the connections together with different parts of your brain. So there are so many interesting parts of your brain we're only starting to see now in the past 6 years. And I've interviewed over 36 neuroscientists for the book that comes out in January called Fear is Fuel.
That's good.
You can pre-order on Amazon.
Yeah, that's awesome. Fear is Fuel.
And the interesting thing is if you just have that intention, you make that choice, even if it's, even like you said, 5 minutes, you're the one in control and you're the author of your life instead of being, you know, at someone else's sort of behest.
Yeah. You work in the fear space. We'll talk about fear gurus specifically, but you work in the fear space. What's scaring people to do things that they really want to do in life?
So I think the biggest problem we have, particularly in the United States, and I see it mostly with the millennial generation, it's really easy to see, is that people are afraid of fear. Right? They're not necessarily afraid of the things that as soon as they start to feel the sensation of fear, they want to turn away from it.
Right.
Right? And we need more fear in our life. And most people don't get that. But the more we're able to understand when that little gland at the base of our brain that's shaped like an almond, it's called the amygdala, when that thing tries to hijack our thought process, there's the decision making we're going to do after that is always bad.
Right.
So you can make decisions one of two ways, either out of fear or out of opportunity. When you make decisions out of fear, it always leads to regret and shame and usually failure. You make decisions out of opportunity, it leads to growth, happiness, success. So people see that wall of fear. It's like it's like being at the Spartan race here, right? We've got all these obstacles sitting here around us in Tahoe, and people see fear as a wall, and some people just turn away from it because they don't even want to get near it. And when you get on the other side of that wall, that's where all your dreams are.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's like Will Smith, the famous quote, everything you ever want is on the other side of fear. I just think that's the best thing ever.
That wasn't Will Smith. He quoted it. But it's so true, right?
Yeah.
Because it's never as bad as you think. And this is coming from a guy, you know, people call me the fear guru, but the first 35 years of my life, I was the biggest coward you'd ever know.
Yeah.
I mean, I was afraid of absolutely everything.
You know, it's interesting. We had our dinner last night with all the other media people here, and sitting down with a guy, and the weather's beautiful right now. It's supposed to get really crappy tomorrow, which it's going to get crappy. We're in Squaw Valley. Like, it's a ski resort that gets 450.
It's in the mountains, right?
It gets 450 inches a year,
so
we're going to get some snow. But it's going to be the first cold day for most people of the year, and it's going to be a legit wintry mix, it looks like. And we were talking about they have like that media heat at 7 a.m. for the Spartan. And he was a competitive athlete in college, and he's like, you know, back in the days, like, everything, go, 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 no matter what. He's like, now I can say, it's not nice out, I don't want to do it. And to me, like, I'm the exact opposite now. It's like, nobody tells a story about the run they went on when it was 70 degrees and
Amen.
Beautiful.
You never remember this. Yeah, so it's, you know, I spent 6 years training for the Olympics, was second in the Olympic trials, and raced the World Cup for 3 years as a rower. And you know, I was practicing. I've got 6,000 hours of practice in, right, to get to that elite level as a full-time athlete. And I remember distinctly maybe a dozen workouts. And they're all fucking horrible, right? You know, I mean, I remember one so clearly. We were doing winter camp down in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, yeah, I want to hear this. I love the workout.
Oh, dude, and it was right before this Gasparilla Festival. And it's like Mardi Gras in Tampa.
I grew up in South Florida.
Okay, so you know it. And our coach said, look, it's going to be a zoo today. We're going to do our first morning workout. You know, it's just going to be 3 20-minute pieces, anaerobic threshold. But we got to get out at 4 a.m. on the pitch black water, right? And it was you know, pretty crummy weather. And like six of us launched in the pitch black with flashlights taped to the bow of our boat, and we're going out, you know, and it's always competitive pieces, and we're in Tampa Bay, and they've got these dry docks, and they're working on the ships, and the fucking sparks are flying down, right, from these welders doing it, and it's pitch black, and like, you know, there's dolphins, and they could have been sharks, and who knows, and like everyone else went in.
Yeah.
Like all those other guys went the fuck in.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm thinking, you know, we did one 20-minute piece and we still had two more to go. And my training partners bailed.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just like, fuck that. I'm doing the workout. There's no way I'm backing down. And I'm out there all alone and I was terrified.
Yeah.
Right? I was scared to
death. It's spooky out there, man.
Oh man, it's crazy spooky. And any noise you hear, like, you know, normally it's just your waters and it's kind of your oars hitting the water and it's kind of rhythmic. And then all of a sudden you hear
just a little extra.
Look around you, you can't see anything. And so I remember that, you know, and I don't remember the bright sunny day in San Diego and, you know, it was 70 degrees or whatever. So yeah, I'm with you. I embrace that, seeing how much you can push yourself, seeing how much you can get you know, out of your comfort zone.
And that's the opportunity piece of what you're just talking about in the amygdala. You have a chance to look for an opportunity to make a decision out of seeing an opportunity because the fear scares you a little bit.
Yeah.
Or you have making decisions out of fear, which kind of clams everybody up. It's just not healthy whether you do it or not at that point, it seems like.
That's it. And the exploration and knowing and understanding when fear is starting to take over, when that amygdala kicks in, you get this fear cocktail, right? You start producing adrenaline, DHEA, cortisol, all these hormones start going through your body, all these enzymes, and your physiology changes, right? You use much more of your muscles, right? So that's why most people know we use 50 to 60% of our muscles if we're a trained athlete. Sometimes we can go up to 65% or 70%. But when that fear response kicks in, you can use 100%.
Right.
Most people use about 10% of their brain. When the fear response kicks in, you can get up to 50%. So you have superpower, and that's why I say use fear as fuel, but only if you can recognize it and step back to say, okay, I see what's going on. I'm not going to make a reactional decision. I'm not going to just knee-jerk based on fear. I got this fear cocktail going on. I'm going to take a break, try and separate my thinking from this fear response and see if I can use this fear as super fuel.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be some reasonable decision making when you come, because you see people on the other end of the spectrum who, you know, drive fast 24/7 without any risk reward concepts in their head. It's interesting. Okay. So a couple things. You mentioned gratitude and you start your day with that. So today it's pretty much the start of the day. So what would be on your list today?
First and foremost, you.
Oh, thanks,
like,
sir.
Like, I'm super grateful that you invited me to the podcast. I'm really thankful that your listeners are taking the time out of their day to listen to us. So that's first and foremost. I woke up alive.
Always
I got
good.
To talk to my wife and my son on the way over here. So we were FaceTiming, and he's a hockey player. Heard about hockey practice and some of the other stuff. So. Like, I've got so much to be grateful for.
Yeah.
That just coming out here and having the opportunity this day, I've got, you know, some great people to meet, some really interesting stuff. So, yeah, super grateful.
I think it's so easy, especially the social media thing, when you hop on your phone and you just want to see what other people are doing. But if you let people know that you're grateful for them, it's coming back to you. It's coming back
to
you really freaking quick. And it seems like it's a selfless thing, and it can be. But if you just kind of realize, I'm working with people every day, like early in the morning. We have a gym back in Colorado, so lots of people are coming through the doors. And then we're getting on calls and stuff. If you can keep that energy up and just let people know how appreciative you are, it's coming back.
And sometimes, you know, before, and you know this, Scott, I had a really rare form of leukemia. And that's surviving that is what sort of turned me into a courageous person and completely changed my life. But excuse me, before that, I was so focused on covering up my fears and creating this cocoon around me. You know, when I was running the tech companies that I started, I was driving $150,000 cars and wearing $10,000 suits and being the intimidating, tough, you know, typical.
For the record, he's not wearing a $15,000 suit right now.
Dude, I got Guns
N'
Roses.
He's rocking the Guns
N'
Roses. We could do without the Boston hat, but it's okay.
Come on. We'll talk baseball in a minute. But the thing was, I was afraid to show gratitude, right? So what I was covering up was shame and guilt and regret from all the stuff that I was afraid to do. I was afraid to get on an airplane. I was afraid to, you know, ask girls out. Like, growing up, it was a nightmare. And so I was afraid to show gratitude or tell people, you know, it was great or show affection or anything like
that.
Did
it seem weak? Is that why?
Or, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It seemed weak. Or it seemed like I might give someone the upper hand or tell them they did a good job might mean I didn't do a better job, right? I mean, it was all this fucked up psychology driven by fear. And when you get much more power when you open up and you say, look, I'm really scared to do this, and I'm grateful, Scott, you're sitting here next to me, and you can help me feel good about doing this podcast because, you know, it's super. I couldn't do this without you, man. Thanks so much, right?
That's awesome.
And so it really empowers you, and it gives you such a different kind of strength when you can finally get rid of that armor, you know, that's around you.
What's not, you know, I think a lot of people say something like this when they're trying to get people to just think about life a little differently and getting past fear, like try something you're scared of every day or every week, whatever it is. It sounds like good advice. how do you find something that you're scared of every day or every week? Like, what are some of those things that you would consult someone on? You know what I mean?
Sure. So I think the first thing I want to draw a distinction is there's a lot of people who say, you know, and Eleanor Roosevelt was one of the first people who said, scare yourself every day. But there's not a lot of people who've given a technique or a platform to what you should do when you scare yourself.
Right.
So one of the things I talk about in the book is when you scare yourself, do an exploration in terms of what you feel in your body. Because every time you scare yourself, you'll have that same reaction. So it might be, for me, it's like bats in my stomach. Not butterflies, but like big old vampire bats banging around in there.
Ditto.
And my palms will get sweaty, you know, and my jaw will get a little bit tight. So I've got all the same things, and we all do, right? I call them our fear tells, because they're unconscious reactions to fear. So the more you can get to know those, then when you get that email or you get that phone call from your boss or you know, your best friend or your parents or whatever, and you start to feel them, you say, okay, this is the amygdala trying to take over my decision making. That's trying to hijack what I'm thinking. I get it. I'm used to fear now, so I'm not gonna freak out. So that's the whole reason you scare yourself every day. So one, you know when that amygdala kicks in, and then two, you understand that, okay, I'm going to step back and I'm not going to be the guy standing at the plate with the 100-mile-an-hour fastball barreling down him. I'm going to be the umpire looking at everything, understanding everything, and then I can decide what I want to do. And so that's the reason to scare yourself every day. The how can be anything, right? It can be taking a cold shower for 5 minutes because you jump in a cold shower and it hurts and it stings and it's uncomfortable. But if you stay there for 5 minutes, you're not going to die. Nothing's going to happen. Anyone can take a 5-minute cold shower.
For sure.
But 99% of the people will say they can't.
Yeah.
And that's just a fear.
I grew up in South Florida. Cold showers are fun.
Yeah. Cold. So cold to you is like 72, 73.
I've definitely I've adapted to the Colorado living. So, but yeah. No, I love that. And just thinking about paying attention to those unconscious reactions, physiological reactions that you have.
Yeah.
Just for fun, the thing that it doesn't scare me, but the most uncomfortable, like one-on-one stuff all day long, big group stuff where I have an expertise all day long, social situations where like I would know one person in a group of five people. Mm. Like this happened 3 times yesterday.
Really?
At the airport, knew a couple of the athletes that are coming out here, some of the high-level athletes I'm friends with, but they're with five of their peers, and they're already engaged. Like, going into those situations, for me, is definitely one of those. And you feel it, and you're like, all right, just relax. It's kind of like when you're running, and you got to shake out your shoulders, just make sure you're not tense anymore.
Yeah.
And then you just go, just go have a conversation. People aren't thinking you're weird because you're coming to talk to them. You know what I mean?
No, not at all.
But I think that's pretty common for a lot of people in social situations, for sure.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's big groups. You know, I know actors and professional speakers who still throw up before they go out on stage. And they've been doing it for years, right? It's understanding that look, we've got this primal response. So that amygdala, that gland at the base of our brain that's shaped like the almond, that's running a 2-million-year-old piece of software, right? How fucked up is that? The only thing it cares about is passing our genes on to the next generation.
Yeah.
It doesn't care about happiness or success or fulfillment or, you know, running our own business or winning the Spartan World Championship. Only cares about making sure I'm a good mate and I can find as many mates as possible.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go in, you know, some intimidating crowd of people you don't know, your amygdala is saying, this isn't our tribe, right? We might get rejected. This is a threat, right? It's not a challenge. So it's a threat versus challenge mindset, right?
Yeah.
And that's why you're feeling it. And if you can turn that, you know, as a baseball player, you know, if you're David Ortiz, and I'm going to stick with him.
I actually like him. Okay, we can go with
him. Poppy's amazing. So if you're, you know, if it's bottom of the ninth and two outs or, you know, that game four against the Yankees back in 2004, and you've got all this pressure on you, your amygdala is firing 100%. You know, you're going crazy, but he's got the ability and he's learned to separate his breathing and his heart rate, to go from an incoherent, erratic heart rate to a coherent heart rate, get control of it, and he uses that as fuel. A-Rod, on the other hand, great hitter during the normal season, horrible in postseason.
That's a really good analogy.
He couldn't handle the pressure.
No, and a lot of it's repetition and having the opportunity, and that's why in the day-to-day stuff, like, figuring that out is so important. I mean, repetition for every aspect of life is important. But
That's what Arnie says. Oh, you want to get good at anything? It's reps. It's crazy. Doesn't matter what it is.
So the leukemia thing. So my dad actually had he had terminal cancer when he was 23 years old. So testicular cancer. This is back in the early 80s. I was like 3 or 4 years old. And this is a big backdrop in my life. So a lot of things I do are probably set on.
You were how old?
I was young, 3 or 4.
Oh, okay. All right.
So yeah, basically we have about 5 minutes here.
Okay.
We have 10 minutes. I thought she'd put the 5 up. She put the 10 up. So he, testicular cancer, they removed testicle. They thought they caught it early. My parents had my sister, and then it came back with a vengeance. It metastasized every major organ. And back in the early 80s, I don't know if you've researched the chemo that they used to use. It's bad now.
They used to
freaking destroy people.
Yeah.
So what they did is they opened him up. He had one scar that went from below his belly button, around his belly button, up to his sternum, and around. They opened him up, removed as much of the cancer as they could manually, and then put him through chemo rounds like nobody's business. And before he went in for the treatment, they gave him 3 months to live. And, he lived until 3 years ago. He died at 62, complications from that chemo, like killed his kidneys and just crazy shit like that.
Yeah.
But he shared that story a lot. He's an educator and a coach and all that stuff, and that's something that you got to get across to young kids because they don't see big picture stuff like that. But if you, I know you've kind of faced a similar situation, but if you had 3 months today, what would you do with your 3 months if you knew that was it?
I'd do exactly what I'm doing now.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the point of my life, you know, and it was never like that before the leukemia. It was always about, I set a goal after the Olympics. I went back to top 5 business school and I set a goal of 40 by 40. Make myself a net worth of $40 million by the time I was 40 years old and fuck everything else, right? I didn't care about family or friends, working 80 hours a week, all about what was in the future and hitting that goal. And it was, it was so shallow that when I almost died and I was in Hopkins and I stood up, they operated on me one night and I woke up to go to the bathroom and it was like trying to stand up on one of those teacup rides, just everything's waving around like a crazy movie. And then I got this tunnel vision and bright light, the whole nine yards. And I thought, fuck, I'm dying.
Yeah.
Like this is it. And I just had this tremendous sense of shame and regret. And I'm thinking, man, I never saw the world because I was afraid to fly. I haven't spent any time with my wife since, I started these businesses and my friends, I haven't talked to them from my friends from school and in ages. And I like felt terrible about my life. And I decided if I got another opportunity that I was going to turn it around, and I won't give away the ending, but I lived.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
And don't tell anyone.
I was almost on the cliff there. I was like, wait, what happened?
What happened? So it was, it was at that point. I read about this study from Cornell called the Legacy Study.
Yeah.
And they interviewed 2,000 people or 2,500 people between the ages of 72 and 109. And they were trying to find the wisdom of the elders, right? And what they ended up finding was only one thing that was common among these people who were about to, die and their life was over. And they almost all wished they had spent less time worrying.
Yeah. I think I saw that.
Crazy. And so I never want to get to my life. I live my life now, and I hope your listeners do too, doing exactly what I want to do. And the thing that holds people back, if you've got people out there listening who are saying, I want to go do that Ultra Trail Mont Blanc. I want to go do a Spartan Beast. I want to start my own business, but I'm going to wait till I save up more money. I'm going to wait till I get in better shape. I'm going to wait till, my kids get older. Don't wait.
No.
Remember your death. Remember it could come at any time and live your life like you remember it.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to be. If you can honestly say that if you knew the day you were going to die is in a few months, and you wouldn't change anything, like you're not going to go try to get it all in. And if you're just doing it on a daily basis, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, worrying's for the birds. My wife worries, a little different wiring, but for the most part, having a relationship where both of us aren't just sitting trying to put our energy towards things that might or might not happen. It's a good place to be. So
that's it.
All right, so we got a couple more minutes. I want to do some things that people can take away with them from a movement standpoint, because you're a physical guy and that's a big part of it. Website again, just so people can check that out.
Sure, pjsweeney.com, on Instagram, the Fear Guru, or Twitter at pjsweeney.
Nice.
And the book Fear Is Fuel comes out in January.
Nice. And the website's fine. Like, when I sit down, I don't really feel like doing a cliff notes of people's websites, because they're going to be interested enough listening to you. They're going to go check all that stuff out.
Sure.
I think that's
you
really
bet.
Cool. So, crew, you rode.
Rode. Yep.
Let's take that to the general population, people in the gym who are on the rowing machine.
Yep.
And it's probably one of my top least favorite exercises.
It's fucking horrible. The rowing machine and it's nothing like going outdoors.
No, and I do it. I'm on the rower at least twice a week.
Yeah.
And usually like higher intensity efforts. Like I don't just go sit on there for 20 minutes because I don't have the need for it. But what are some things that people can give me, like two or three tips that people can do on this to make it better? And then let's give them a really good set for the next time they go in the gym.
Okay, so the biggest mistake I see people making on the rowing machine is technical,
right?
They're not reaching forward enough or laying back enough. So you got to just remember to hold your knees down as long as you can till your hands get over your socks. And then once you're in that leaning forward position, it's just like doing a clean.
Right.
So if you're rowing really well, it's like cleaning your body weight, you know, 30 times a minute.
What would you put? So in that effort, it's 80% legs.
Maybe 70% legs.
70% legs.
Yeah, but it's always an acceleration. So the point should be that you catch it without opening your back, right?
Okay.
So you catch it just with your legs and hanging straight from your arms. Like there's a board connected between your hand and the seat.
Yeah.
And it moves steadily. And then once you get the momentum of that flywheel going, then you swing the back open like you're a lacrosse stick trying to throw the ball out of a lacrosse stick. It's just that boom acceleration, and then you go back and recover.
Yeah.
So
yeah, definitely. What about hand position? Like, I see a lot of people dropping their hands below their knees. You can't do that in the water.
No, you can't. You definitely can't do it in the water. And that's why people say ergs don't float.
You know,
I was second in the Olympic trials, and you know in the top 10 or 12 in the world, and I was probably the top 30 in the world for erg scores. You know, for I could do 2,000 meters in like I think 5:58 was my best time, which isn't very fast.
I just puked in my mouth a little bit. Okay.
And so you got to pretend your hands are above the table when you're pulling back, and then below the table when you're going forward, and keep your knees down.
So not like a huge drop below.
No.
You always see people drop below their knees.
No, that's it, and you'll see it. But I think the best workout that I can recommend is always a pyramid. So the Aztec pyramid used to be killer, and that's doing 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 4 minute, 4 minute, 3 minute, 2 minute, 1 minute. And that'll just kick your ass.
What effort? You just all out?
All out, yeah, all out.
What about recovery?
So halftime recovery, 1 minute, 30 seconds recovery, 2 minutes, 1 minute recovery, 3 minutes, 90 second recovery. And that's a killer workout. That'll kick your ass for sure.
When you're recovering on that, are you recovering on the machine?
Yeah, I mean, you want to get off. Yeah, just stay on it, and you want to keep the flywheel moving, especially you know with 10 seconds before the next one. So you're not picking up like a huge heavy boat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So you start paddling nice and easy, just kind of 10 seconds before you take off.
Awesome, man. We covered a lot in a short period of time. We probably would have had 5 minutes more, but we both wanted coffee.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Exactly.
We're going to be running.
Which made this interview that much better.
It really did. You would have been, with the Boston hat, I don't even know if I'd have sat down.
Oh, man. Come on. Who's your team?
Well, I've lived in Colorado long enough. It's the Rockies, but I will have to say, back in the early 2000s, it was the Yankees.
Was it?
I still kind of root for them in the American League, and that 2004... I had so many friends that were Boston fans. There's a lot of Boston people in Colorado.
In Colorado,
it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, you got to respect the freaking coming back from 3-0 to finally figure it out.
It was crazy.
But yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, we're able to call. I mean, the fear thing, I try to get to the place where worry is not the first thing you do every day.
Amen.
Try to have some kind of intention when you wake up in the morning. And go check out Patrick's website for sure.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Scott.
Awesome, buddy. Great. That's great.